You're listening to the Journey On podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick is a horseman, trainer, international clinician, and author who helps empower horse people from all over the world with the skills, knowledge, and mindsets needed to create trusting partnerships with their horses. Warwick offers a free 7-day trial to his comprehensive online video library that includes hundreds of full-length training videos and several home study courses at videos.warwickschiller.com. Just because you see
what is sure. G'day, everyone. Welcome back to the Journey On podcast. I'm your host, Warwick Schiller, and the lovely lady I interviewed today's name is Kate Nelligan. And you know, if I look at Kate's bio, it kind of says she does equine partner coaching. She's a life and business coach. She's an animal communicator and she does team building and leadership training. But there's a great path that leads to that. You know, she has a master's degree in something called spiritual psychology. Now, how funny is this? Yesterday I was on a Zoom call with somebody who has a master's in spiritual psychology, and that was the first time I'd ever heard the term. And then today I have somebody on the podcast who has a master's in spiritual psychology. 57 years old, never heard those two words put together before. Heard him yesterday, heard him today too. But then there's another part where Kate has spent quite a bit of time in what you could call conscious media. If anybody's familiar with the TV channel Gaia, things like that, like the movie Heal, you know, the Heal documentary. There's a Heal podcast and Kate was actually a guest on there, but she's had a lot to do with that sort of thing. She's done a TED talk. There's just so much to Kate, and it was really interesting knowing those things about her, chatting to her and unraveling how they all came about. And yeah, Kate is super cool. I was vibing on her. It was very, very cool. And you guys will love listening to her too. She's such an awesome lady. Kate Nelligan, welcome to the Journey On podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you. You know, I found really interesting. I was just researching a bit more about you this morning before we started. And you have a master's degree in spiritual psychology.
Yes.
The funny thing is yesterday I was talking to a guy on a Zoom call who has a master's degree in spiritual psychology. I've never heard of spiritual psychology before, so I thought that was really, really interesting that I'm 57 years old, never heard of that. Now I've heard of it 2 days in a row.
I love those coincidences, yeah. Or synchronicities, should we call them?
Synchronicities, let's call them that. So before we start here, why don't you explain to us what exactly is you do these days, and then I want to unravel how you got from your cultural upbringing in Jersey to doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, I love it. So I mostly do equine-partnered life and business coaching. So I pair horses and humans together in personal and professional growth. And I also do animal communication and healing work for both animals and the healing part for humans. And I love storytelling, much like you do. And so I love speaking and writing as well.
You're quite the prolific speaker. I had a look on your website, and you've done a lot of speaking, including a TED talk. I'm just going to jump right in there. Tell us about your TED talk. Where was that?
Yeah, I actually thank my horse for helping me get a TEDx talk. I was helping to put together that event in Malibu. It was TEDx Malibu, and I knew the organizer, and I was putting together basically lots of different resources for her. And I really wanted to do a TEDx talk, but I had one of those like, oh, I don't know, you know, if I can do it yet. And so she was visiting the ranch to see a session in Malibu, and she said, this is the last year I'm doing it. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, can I do it then? And she says, she just goes, well, are you ready? And I'm standing next to this horse that I'm leasing, this incredible horse named Felici. Her name means happily in Italian. And she's just giving me this confidence. I'm just like feeling her confidence. And, you know, the organizer is like, are you ready yet? And I said, no, but I will be. And I just went for it. And I knew like what I was most lit up to talk about was how people get to become really successful and then they're unhappy or they're unfulfilled. And I'm like, what is that? Is that just an insatiable ego? Like, what is that? And I knew those people. I was one of those people at the movie studio. And I'm like, I need to dive into this. And so then it really was actually about perfectionism. And so that was the TEDx talk.
What was it called?
The Pursuit of Perfection, which I didn't know what to call it. And I was driving up to the ranch one day and I was behind a car and I think it's Lexus's motto, the Pursuit of Perfection. Mm. And I saw it and I went, that's it. So I saw it on a license plate frame or sign. And I'm like, that's it. That's what I'm calling the TEDx talk. And then two cool things happened. My mom was like, if you could shout out one message to the whole world, if you're on top of a mountain and you could shout it out to everyone, what would it be? And I got emotional. I was like, you are enough. Like, that's the message I want people. Cause I think that's our core wound, is like never feeling enough. And so I just wanted to end with that. And then I had some good help and coaches tell me my talk was not at all about me. It was about the audience, which really helped me. And so it was a cool, cool journey. It was a big activation for me because as I studied perfectionism, I was slowly releasing it. And the horses were helping me to do the same.
Mm. It's interesting you're talking about, you know, a lot of successful people are not happy. You know, and I've had different podcast guests on the podcast. One especially, Sarah Schlotte from Canada, but she's a therapist from Canada. And she was talking about, coping privilege. You ever heard of coping privilege?
I don't know if I have.
So she, you know, there's white privilege and there's male privilege and there's female privilege and there's all sorts of privileges. She was talking about coping privilege and she was talking about how you could have two brothers who both had the same traumas as children or whatever, but one of them, you know, maybe dad didn't pay enough attention to whatever. So one of them, the way he was wired was to achieve stuff. So he became the sports star and then he had all the A's and then he ends up being a CEO. But his brother, the way he started coping was drinking and drugs. And so one's a heroin addict, one's a CEO, and they are both in those two places for the same reason. One just had his way of coping is by society, he's successful, but he's kind of in the same place the other guy's in. You get what I'm talking about there? Like, and then years ago, I got this book called Backbone. It's like a men's spiritual self-help sort of a book. And that guy was saying that most men spend all their life trying to find four things. I think I'll be happy if I can have four things at once. And those four things are material wealth, vocational success, health, and love. And so many men are unhappy and they think if I could have those, I would then be happy. And you can go to the grave thinking, well, the reason I'm not happy is because I don't have those things. But he said the lucky few or the unlucky few get to where they have all four of those things at the same time and then look around, they go, well, this sucks.
Yeah.
I thought there'd be happiness here. And then he says, so then the real quest starts. But he says you've got to have three things. You've got to have – number one is you've got to know your purpose. Number two is you've got to have a deep and authentic spiritual belief. And number three is you've got to get rid of your bullshit.
Love it.
And it's interesting that you started out just talking about how a lot of successful people are not happy. And it's, I think from the outside looking in at successful people, you think, oh, they're so lucky. They've got it going on. But
yeah. Yeah. I work with a lot of high performing women and that it's like the constant busyness of the monkey mind and the like hustle culture, or they're in corporate America and they feel like they have to be more in the male energy than the female. And so it's, we're learning to slow down and work with our intuition and really do the purpose work. Like people will say, I want to get back in touch with my values. I want to be more responsive rather than reactive. Like there's a lot that I think once people get to that point where they're pushed by pain, right? You're either pushed by pain or pulled by pleasure. They're like, okay, I'm ready. I need to make changes. And so I'm grateful to find people when they're ready for that. And they're ready for more spirituality. Because for me, like, I led this very ego-driven life until I found spirituality. And that's what really helped me actually love my life, because a lot of spirituality also includes service. And I think that's another way that people really find purpose, is some form of service, so that they feel like, you know, they are making a meaningful contribution to the world, and that's important to them. And they feel that. They feel that easy flow of giving and receiving that.
I love the way you talk. Let's unravel how you got to be talking this way, because you grew up in New Jersey. And
Jersey.
I don't think those are Jersey ways of looking at the world. So tell me about the path. So, like, when you were a kid, what was your childhood like?
Yeah. I feel like I had a good childhood. I'm lucky that I grew up in, like, rural Pennsylvania, because we would watch the deer out back and my dad would drive me every Sunday to see cows. And I think that's actually where I found my love of, like, animals, is through just being around them. And I was, like, the kid that was always, like, picking up the rock to find, like, the frog or to find the snake. And I was just in love with animals back then. So I'm glad
can
I had that.
Can we just pause for a second? My son's girlfriend, Nicole, is from Pennsylvania. And when you were talking a minute ago, before you just told me you're from Pennsylvania, I was thinking, she sounds just like Nicole.
Oh, interesting.
Now I know why.
Yeah. First 7 years of my life, I was in rural Pennsylvania. And I went to college in Pennsylvania, too. So I did spend a decent amount of time in that state. And then a brief bit in Connecticut, we lived on a couple acres, and then in Jersey. And I find that, you know, in New Jersey, it was just a really good school system. I had really good friends. And I think my parents always were like, you can do what you want. My mom is a teacher. My dad's in human resources. They were people. They were, they cared about that. And so I think I had a lot of that around me. And then when I was in college, what really kind of the pivotal point is, I had always wanted to be a veterinarian because I loved animals. So I was going to be pre-med, and I failed biology so fast in college. And I'm like, this is not for me. So I took out the college catalog and I'm like, okay, let me just check off every single class I have an interest in, which I'm glad I was, like, smart enough to do that based on my interest. And I just checked them all off and I added them up, and the most was psychology. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do psychology. So I did that, and I said, I will never become a therapist. I cannot stand listening to people's problems. I want to play for a living. Like, that was my thing. And I do feel like I play for a living, and I also listen to a lot of problems. So I did not go into the therapy direction, but I ended up going into spiritual psychology and then becoming a coach, because we got really well set up to become a coach through that program. So.
Okay. That was quite the jump right there. So we went from Jersey, Connecticut to degree in psychology, then spiritual psychology. Tell me, what was so you got a BA in psychology first. What was the draw to spiritual psychology? How did you end up, there?
Yeah. So what's interesting is I was actually an atheist for most of my life up to, like, 25. And so there was no, I couldn't read a book with the word God in it. I had no interest in any religion or any spirituality, except I was always interested in, like, the paranormal, like past lives and that kind of thing. So what happened was, my mom had this, and still does, this thing in New Jersey called the Metaphysical Center of New Jersey, which is all these courses on metaphysics. And I'm like, this is, you know, so it was around me all the time. And I started to have a lot of existential experiences I couldn't explain. And I'm like, what is going on here? Like, and I was such a scientist. I was like, you had to prove it to me. I was not interested in any of the religion. But then in college, I'm like, let me try different things, right? And I've always been, like, into novelty and on wonder. So I'm like, let me just try different things. So when I studied abroad in London, I ended up doing world religions and Buddhism. And I was like, this is really fascinating. And then, so that kind of opened the door, was Buddhism. And then I wanted to know more about what was going on with these experiences. So then when I found out about spiritual psychology, I went, wait, what's that? And then I looked at it for a couple of years. One of my good friends was doing it. I randomly met him as soon as I moved to Los Angeles. And I felt like I was supposed to meet him. He's been like a lifelong friend. And so I went and I got my master's in it. And I just was, it's changed my life completely. So.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a bit of a grounding in it with your mum being interested in that metaphysical thing. So how'd you end up in London? What was the studying abroad? What was the reason to go there?
I feel like I had always wanted to go to another culture. I just wanted it to be English speaking. So I wanted Australia as well. So I ended up picking London, which at the time I absolutely loved that city. And it was a blast. I feel like it was the first time I got out of my shell. Like I was experiencing different cultures. We lived in like a far out zone. So we were actually, our group was like the only white people around, which talk about a different culture change from growing up in New Jersey. Yeah. In addition to, you know, we took public transportation absolutely everywhere. And it was like the first time I had different ethnic food. So it really kind of woke me up to, you know, what is life like outside of New Jersey and the East Coast, New England, right? And it was powerful. And we studied, you know, the teacher was a Buddhist teacher, and I just found that I really enjoyed different philosophies, really. I could have been a philosophy major, I think, too. I think that's so fascinating.
So what sort of an ethnic neighborhood did you live in? Were they mostly Indian?
Yeah, it was, and Middle Eastern. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. It was really fascinating. The college was very, very multicultural in many ways. And so it was really a really good thing. But we had a bond. There was like five or six of us that we just did everything together. So it was really fun. It was like a mini community. And then, it was one of my first kind of wake ups and realized there's a whole world out there. And then we traveled all over Europe. So we took a week and we went to like six or seven countries. And so that also really helped, just immersing myself in. And back then it was like, everything felt easier. It was 2000, you know, it was like just a different world, you know? So
that's cool. So after you got, so you came back, what made the move to LA?
Yeah, so I was working in entertainment in New York City, and I was living with my best friends in Hoboken, New Jersey, across the river. And then what happened was I lost my job with like 45 other people. And so I went, well, this is the time to really make a move. I didn't know what I wanted to do, except that I knew I loved working in the movie studios because I was at a company that helped support them in New York. And so I was like, well, I'd love to work for a movie studio. You see the movie Finding Neverland? It's such a cool movie. But that's what I realized, like, that was what I wanted to do, was go immerse myself in the creation energy, the energy of creativity and storytelling. And so I went and I basically talked to every single person at all the studios that I knew. I did informational interviews and I got myself out. I started American Film Institute, which was great because I was around a lot of neat things there. And then I got into a movie studio eventually. So I just did it. I was like, I'm working in that environment. And I loved it until I didn't. So it was fun.
Let's back up to New York City. You're working for the entertainment industry. What exactly are you doing? Because you've got this degree at this point in time, you've got this degree in spiritual psychology, don't you?
Oh, so I actually got the spiritual psychology in Los Angeles. So I was just psychology.
Oh, okay.
And I was very, like, my pivotal moment was with the spiritual psychology was I was actually working at the movie studio and I had hit this level of success and I was getting my master's in spiritual psychology, but I was in LA, I was working at the studio and I was selling horror movies. So I was in that place where I was like, I was selling horror movies and I was working on these really dark films. And then I was going to Agape, a church about unconditional love. And I was getting my master's in spiritual psychology and I was so incongruent, right? And I had an out of body experience where I looked down at myself once, like I was selling a really dark movie to Apple, to iTunes. And I'm like, Kate, what are you doing? Like, this is not your life. Like, and I just knew I needed to get out. So that's when it actually happened was, you know, I still had have this like ego drive to be like, oh, I want to be head of a movie studio and I want to have this big, you know, splash in entertainment. And then in my master's program, I decided I wanted to do conscious media. So I had an inspirational, uplifting video channel in conscious media. And then I basically was like, I need to get out of entertainment. I need to get out of the studio. So I did. I started to do the conscious media channel. And then very quickly, the horses took over my life and said, you're to work for us now. So that's how that all happened. So then my spiritual psychology program paired really well with what the horses are naturally doing and teaching. So, but yeah, that's where it was. I was like in the midst of really this battle between, is my ego going to win in this lifetime or is my soul? So.
How did the horses take over? Actually, before we get to how the horses take over, let's go back to you. When you said I had an out-of-body experience, did it feel like that or you actually had one?
I feel a great question. I feel like it felt like that because I lifted above myself and the sense of like there was a very, it's not just like when you're meditating and you can have that, you know, the higher vision looking down. It was one of those where I felt like I was fully above myself looking down and going, wait, who are you? What are you doing? Like, it was a very weird experience. So it felt like I was out of body for a minute, but I've had those a couple of times. So I had a full out of body when I was getting my master's program because they put us in the desert for 5 days without a phone and we are doing deep work. And I did have like what I'd call a full ego death then, which is a whole wild story, but yeah, so it wasn't as like that. It was a moment of feeling out of body.
Okay. This is the podcast for wild stories. So don't skip over that. So as part of your spiritual psychology degree, you went to the desert for 5 days. Tell me all about going to the desert for 5 days.
So they call it practicum and they have a bunch of like, you are here to truly experience your authentic self, right? You are here to put your 2 years of your master's to work. And so we're in trios where you have a client, a counselor, and a neutral observer holding space. And they're doing processes, you know, like one of them was you were directly talking to God. And like, that was a very different experience than talking to my intuition or my higher self, or even talking to guides. It was really unique and they really had us do deep work. So when I got there, I had bad stomach pain because I was starting to release. And then I started crying and I was crying for a couple of days. And I went into one of the professors and I said, I'm like, I don't want to cry. Like, this is all. And he's like, keep crying, just do it. And I'm like, and I was like, no, I thought I was here to like experience bliss and joy. Why am I crying? And then what happened was I realized like I hadn't cried tears since like I was a kid. Like there was so much stuck, yep. You know, and I had to really let it all go. And it was safe space to do so. So yeah, I finally hit a major surrender about like the day before we were finishing. And you know, they have us get there usually through experiencing anger or through sadness. And mine was more through sadness. And I felt like I fully left my body. I felt a huge thing. I call it an ego death. And the reason I call it that is because for 2 to 3 weeks after I was living in bliss. And right after I had the ego death, you know, like you can't sit in, I couldn't sit in a chair. So I was laying flat out. I had the two client and or counselor and neutral observer hanging out with me while I was laying on the ground. And I could see that everything in life was not real. Like nothing was real. Everything felt, and I was just laughing because like you think everyone's going crazy. They're not. They're just having an awakening. You know, they're having this experience where that human mind is no longer running the show. And it's so amazing. It's beautiful. At first, it was terrifying to me. Like I called and was like, I'm going to die here. And I did, but I had an ego death. Like, and it was very transformational.
Did you really struggle kind of to let go of that, whatever that is?
Yeah, I did. I needed support. There was even like a fire in the hotel when I was there. So all my stuff was coming up, just so much stuff. And one of the things they asked us to do was to practice like, you know, stating thy will be done, right? It's not my will, it's thy will. So it's the surrender to source. And so I had to really practice like active surrender there. And I was like, what do you mean I have to let go at that level? You know, I wasn't ready or wanting to do that, the whole like thy will. And it was a really powerful statement that I tried out. They always said, listen, run an experiment. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. But at least try the experiment. See if it works for you. See if you have, you know, some sort of growth from this. And so I did. And I remember like I was sitting there with like the pillow and I was just like sobbing into it. And then I finally let go enough that I wasn't carrying all of, they call it like rocks in your backpack, like all your traumas and all your stuff. Yeah, I just fully let go of the backpack and I flew. It was cool.
I'm almost having like cringes here.
Oh no, is that a bad thing? I would hope it would be chills.
No, it's because it's my stuff kind of going, oh, I don't know if I could let go that much. Oh, you know what I mean? It's not judging you. It's like, oh yeah, I totally get, you know, but it's strange that part of us that's scared of letting go. And it doesn't matter how many times you get told on the other side is bliss and it's amazing. I don't know what it is that doesn't want to let go, but it's, you know, is that scary part. Or maybe it's just your ego just trying to control the show, you know?
Yeah, I think it is the ego, but it's also like the body is, I don't know as much about somatics as I'd like to, but I think the body is also protects, you know, and this was it was almost like an experience of being just fully out of body. So there was this level of like the body probably wanting to hold on to what it was comfortable with too, right? Like what it knew, you know, and like we have to grow through changing the body, I think, you know.
So what was life like post that experience?
Yeah, everyone at work was like, Kate, what did you do? Like, where can we get that? And it was a cool thing. It was hard to drive a car. It was hard to, like, I remember I was like, you know, having a celebration dinner with my parents and I felt like I was flying over the Pacific Ocean. Like, it was wild. Like, I'm like a very earthy double Capricorn. Like, that was just out there for me, but I loved it. And I had, you know, a lot of joy for like two full weeks. And what actually brought me out of it is I was at a work event and cause I didn't actually finish my corporate career until a couple years after my master's. Like I wish it all coincided, but it took a little bit of time. And so, you know, I was at a corporate conference event and I had some wine and that actually popped me right out of being in the bliss. So it's interesting, but it was a really nice experience and I remember it and I remember it like we can always go back to not taking things so seriously. Like I have to remind myself of that sometimes, you know.
So after having been there and then popping out of it, what was it like after coming out of it? Was it like, oh, I wish I could get it back, or is it, I'm glad I had that experience. Is it wish I could get it back? What was going through your mind after that?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I was, you know, we have a practice that we learn in the program around self-forgiveness. So I did have to do a little bit of that because I was kind of like frustrated that I had wine or that I was, you know, at a conference and I couldn't like hold it for longer. They teach us so much about acceptance and neutrality that I think I was also like okay with it. Like I think I knew it was going to be temporary to a certain degree. And I'm just grateful, like they did, they told us you will have an experience of your authentic self, right? Like your true divine nature. And so I was just grateful I got that. A lot of us did. I'd say most of us did. It was really powerful also to be with like a couple hundred people who are living in their authentic self at the same time you are. So like we were just dancing and like it was neat.
And this is a master's degree.
Yeah.
this sounds like an ayahuasca.
Yeah,
weekend,
I know. Right? I mean? People like, say like, hey, have you done ayahuasca? I said, I have not, but I feel like I've already had that experience.
Oh, you don't need to.
Yeah.
You don't need to. So what was the catalyst for the end of your corporate career?
I think it was just being too, like, that combo of being too pushed by pain, where I was like, I cannot live outside of my integrity and my values any longer. I knew that I was just frustrated a lot of the time, and I knew someone else would enjoy my job more than me if I'm that frustrated too. In addition to knowing that I really wanted to do something different. So I left and I did my actually manifested my ideal exit, which everyone told me I could not get. And that's another story. But I ultimately, yeah, I just was pulled into the pleasure of wanting to do stuff with conscious media. And I was riding then. I had started to get back into it. I had taken like 10 years off because there aren't really horses around New York city. But I got back in. And so I was like much more interested in putting like what I was interested in first, putting pleasure first, putting service first. So I let go of a 6-figure salary and I just did it.
You just alluded to another story that you said, that's another story. Is that a story you can share with us?
Wait, which story? I already forgot. I realized I did say there was another. Oh, that exit. I don't know if I can share that story.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. I think I signed stuff that said I couldn't at the time.
Oh, okay.
But I'll tell you this, like if someone does say you can't do this, because I had a therapist, an attorney, and other people saying, there's no way you can manifest this. And I got really clear. I was doing weekly visioning with a friend, down to the detail of like, this is what we're doing. This is how it's going. This is what's going to happen. The feeling of it all. And then I had done one that morning, and at 3 o'clock that afternoon, the conversation that I needed happened. So it was a beautiful thing that I definitely worked on. And I was, you know, for about a year, I was seeing myself like, I'm going to exit. And I know, you know, there was a way I wanted to exit. And that's how it happened. So I'm really grateful. There was one thing I had to compromise on. But the most part, I'm grateful that it went the way it did. So
you've walked away from the corporate gig. So what did you start doing then?
That's when I was really running my conscious media channel called Synergy TV, which is not really in existence anymore. So we'll see if and when it comes back. But we curated 500 uplifting videos. And so Uplift was happening at the time too, but we wanted to become like a good news network. So I just was on YouTube and elsewhere talking to filmmakers, going to film festivals, pulling together all the most uplifting content I can find, basically to raise the vibration of like all the negative stuff that I was doing in entertainment, which was so low vibration.
So one of the things that you have done is you were a guest on the Heal podcast. So, you know, I think that came on the heels of the Heal documentary. And I think people like, you know, Bruce Lipton and Deepak and all sorts of people like that, I think have been on the, probably Dr. Joe Dispenza, I imagine, have been on that Heal podcast. What's the question I'm trying to ask here? That Heal podcast, for me, that would be like a big deal to be on. Had you been in a lot of those circles before that, or was that like something new?
Yeah, I think I've been sort of blessed with how the universe has delivered, you know, different types of people into my life in very random, magical ways. A lot of it's through intention. A lot of it's through visualization, you know. Kelly is someone that came into my life because I was through my conscious media work with Adam, the producer of the film or the director of the film. You know, he was at an event I did for Synergy TV when it launched, and I had Tom Shadyac there, who made I Am and is a great conscious media director. And, you know, Adam was there in the audience. And so we became friends. And then, you know, he said, can you help with the Heal documentary? I said, sure. So I connected them to, you know, to Marion Williamson and some people that are in the film. And it was, you know, it was just a fun film to launch. I got to help introduce the film in LA at one of the panels they did. It was Kelly and Peter Krohn. And so it's been a beautiful blessing to be, you know, connected to a lot of these people in different ways. A lot of it, I think, is through being in Los Angeles, having been in film for sure. That was a great setup for a lot of the rest of my life, was to be in film. And, you know, there were still a lot of films I loved working on. I got to do some cool things like the film Precious, which is, you know, such a powerful film, and Warrior and some of the other ones. But yeah, I think it's just through my master's program also, because, you know, a lot of them in LA, that they know the USM program, the University of Santa Monica. And so that's another, it's been another great like hub of connection for me too. So, yeah.
I didn't realize you had something to do with the documentary as well. I thought you just appeared on the podcast. So you just mentioned Peter Krohn. Mm-hmm. That guy can... He's about as concise as anybody I've ever seen. Like, he will say one sentence and I'll be like scratching my head and staring at the wall for half an hour. That guy's super cool.
Yeah, there's some really, really neat people that like Kelly's like talking to, as you are, of course, like especially in the horse world, like it's just some of the greatest minds and visionaries out there, you know. So it's neat to find these places where you can learn from some of the trailblazers and the folks that are really advancing different mindsets and different ways of being. It's cool.
Mm. If you go, I'll have to mention a bit more about Peter now, because a lot of times after a podcast comes out, people are like, well, who did you meet? What was that guy's name? So the guy's name's Peter Krohn, C-R-O-N-E, and look him up. You can follow him on Instagram. And yeah, the dude is just can cut through the clutter and just get to the root of things. Sometimes it's hard to wrap your head around because you just got to let go of a lot of stuff, but yeah, I find he's super cool.
Yeah. Some of the most powerful speakers are ones that are nonlinear. So you really do have to scratch your head. One of my friends is like that. And I'm always like, wait, what did you just say? And then I have to think about it for 20 minutes because it's really powerful and it's not always linear.
No, definitely not. So tell me about, okay, so you've started doing all that sort of thing. When did the horse therapy come along?
Yeah. So I got lucky in some regards. Again, back to the movie studio, I passed my colleague one day and she had this gray horse in her like photo of a gray horse. And I stopped by and I was like, do you have a horse? And she's like, yeah. And so we became friends and her horse was at my first mentor's and they were up in Malibu. And actually I ended up, different story. We were at this other barn first and I manifested this incredible Arabian that I was leasing. And then we moved to where my mentor was and she was doing therapy with addicts and recovery and rehab in the Malibu community. And so I would watch those who were working on rehabilitation from addiction come in and in 2 hours leave completely like back in their bodies and hopeful, just because they were like breathing and centering with horses. And I'm like, what is happening? I said, that took 2 years in my master's program. What is going on in 2 hours with horses? I was blown away because I grew up riding. I didn't have like this one-on-one time on the ground with them. Like that was not, I mean, yes, they were always like fun to be with and walk around with and cuddle, but it was never that intentional and it was never pairing therapy and healing with the horses. And so that, it just blew my mind.
So that kind of was mind blowing for you. Where did you, what came after that? Like, was that like, I've got to get into this. How did you go from witnessing that to fully diving into it?
Yeah, so when I started to watch what the horses were doing and I started to see them in a different way, I said, can I please volunteer? Can I please assist? So I was a couple times a week just essentially bringing horses in and watching and taking notes and being a sponge. To her training was Igala and Carolyn Resnick, and then She brought her master's program in too. She had a spiritual psychology master's program as well. So I just loved watching all of what was happening, and I took a ton of notes. And I, one day she had to go down to the office. She goes, okay, you run this. And I stepped in and I helped a woman by just, you know, asking her to put her hand on her heart and breathe and center. And then she immediately afterwards was like, can I do a private with you? Can I come back? I was like, okay, I guess maybe I'm ready. So I just felt I wanted to step into it. So I started doing like meditation groups to start, and demos. And actually, we got right into corporate group as well. So we were doing corporate team buildings with the horses too. And, you know, she was running a lot of trail rides in that area. And that was not something I was trail riding myself with my lease horse, but I just needed to be with the horses in a new way. It was really, really pretty powerful.
For you guys listening at home, there was one word that Kate said in there that's very, very important. Actually, earlier on in the conversation, you talked about service.
Yeah.
And there was a word you said in there, you said, I volunteered.
Yeah.
And that volunteering ended up being a career path. But if you think about it, and this is, I think this is the magic, there's a magic to service. But, and it's the whole, when you can give with no thought of getting anything back, no ulterior motive, just giving, there's a magic to that. But you cannot have this calculating, well, I'm going to do this and then this is going to happen and then this is going to happen and I'm going to do this. I don't think the magic exists when you have that outlook on it. But when you are just completely open-hearted and I want to help out,
yeah,
I think that's when the magic happens and all the cool stuff happens. And it is so hard. You almost have to be naive or something for it to work. It's so hard because you cannot get in your head thinking, if I do this and then this will happen and then pretty soon I'll be living the life of my dreams. I don't think you can go into it that way. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, but it's certainly happened to me. Everything that I'm doing in life right now was not planned. It just came about because of different decisions I made to help out with no thought of anything back. Do you think there's that magic to it?
Yeah, I love that. I love what you're bringing up because my first rescue mare taught me unconditional giving, and I didn't really know what that was, but it's what you're speaking to. It's that level of offer from the overflow because you do have an open heart because you are that. You can give from that space, right? There isn't a lack. And so I just loved seeing these people transform so quickly and like feel so much more centered and peaceful and present. And I, you know, could have gone down that path because I struggled with alcohol. And so I was like, this is incredible. And I just wanted to be in that environment. So I did that for like a year and a half, and I just, there wasn't a plan of when I was going to do it by myself. I had a bit of resistance for about a year before I started doing this work myself. I had to really face some things like, who am I to get to have my hobby be my work, right? Because I grew up where you had to work hard or you had to potentially suffer for work, not have, you know, not love it. Like I saw that modeled at times. And so, yeah, I had a lot of things that were a little bit maybe even of imposter syndrome, but it was pretty important for me to get going on that at some point. So,
you know what? I just felt that, like I had a wave of something go through me when you said about the supposed to be working hard and, you know, you're not supposed to be doing, your work is supposed to be hard and you're not supposed to enjoy it. It's supposed to suck. And yeah, I just had a, so I think I've got a bit of that in there too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when I talk to other people who are kind of in the same boat, and I don't mean that it's a bad boat, it's a great boat, but I think there is a bit of guilt in there that when you get to do for a living what you love, there's a bit of guilt there. But I think if you didn't love it, you wouldn't have been doing it for free in the first place. You know, you wouldn't have had that, you know, I just love doing this, and you have that giving mentality about it in the beginning. But yeah, I just want to note that it hit me in the chest when you said that. So that's something I've got to look into. So you have Equite Partnered Coaching. You're also a life and business coach. Tell me about life coaching. I don't know much about life coaching. I've had some life coaches on the podcast before. Do you have to, what's the question I'm looking for? Do you have to be, in order to say I'm a life coach, do you have to take a life coaching course, or can you just have a lot of life experience and hang out your shingle?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a regulated field the way you see the psychotherapy field. That said, you know, I didn't know why I was getting my master's in spiritual psychology, and they ask you, what might you do with this? And it just came out of my mouth, well, I want a life coach. And I was like, who said that? I didn't know that was in me, that I wanted to coach. And then I knew I couldn't coach in a traditional way, even though I do a lot of that now. I knew I needed to do something different. So when the horses came in, I'm like, that's actually the best pairing of my gifts and who I am and my love and I'm a better person the second I'm around a horse. Like, I just am. Like, they just make me an immediately better human being. And so I knew I could be more loving and more present with people if I was coaching with horses next to me and like borrowing their power and wisdom and helping that all move together in like a pyramid, really. But ultimately, yeah, USM, the Masters in Spiritual Psychology, really set us up, because in 2 years, I've heard everything you could possibly imagine that people could go through in the human experience, like the darkest of traumas, and I've really held space and helped people, and they put you right in. You're counseling, and they're teaching you 8 different counseling strategies, and so they taught us 26 different communication skills. They make you do your own work on your hardest relationship. That's one of the classes you have to work to improve your own most difficult relationship in life. They have you do some intense things. So I was like, I think I can help people now with using these strategies, these coaching things that were taught. And then I also went and got certified in equine experiential education as well. So I did that. And then I decided I wanted to have my own certification program. So I did that too, because I felt like there needed to be a spiritual lens to the horses now, hence Awakening with Equines, because I wanted to bring that piece in. I think the world is evolving, you know, and it certainly includes traditional psychotherapy and traditional life coaching. And there are a lot of people wanting the spiritual pieces to it as well.
You know, for some people these days, they might look at someone who calls himself a life coach or look at life coaching as like, what a crock, you know what I mean? But if you think about, I think what life coaches do is, we don't have any village elders anymore. You know what I mean? We don't have the wise old people. I think they were the life coaches of the hunter-gatherer society sort of thing, the shamans and the elders. And I think, you know, and especially the way you're coming out, like there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of earth wisdom, natural wisdom that comes from working with the horses. I just wanted to point that out, I think the life coaching does replace that which we used to have.
I love that perspective. Yeah, that's really cool.
And then you mentioned your certification. Tell me about your certification.
So the one I did, the E3A, is focused a lot on corporate, how to work with corporate groups. The one that I created, Awakening with Equines.
So sorry, that's the one I wanted to talk about, was the one that you created. Yeah. What's that called? And tell us all about it.
Yeah. So the Awakening with Equine certification, I created it because I felt like there was something missing in the certifications that were out there. And I had studied a lot of them and looked at them for a long time. And ultimately, I had a whole who are you to create a certification, right? I had to go through that. That's where I probably faced the biggest imposter syndrome of my life.
That right there is why I asked that question. Yeah. I was going to get to that. Yeah. Like, was there at some point in time, did you kind of doubt yourself? Like, who the hell am I?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Well, I had a lot of like, are my peers going to judge me? Am I going to be, you know, are people going to think this is a joke? Because, you know, I had the imposter syndrome because some of the people who've created the certifications have been doing it for 20 years. They've been doing it a long time. What happened, and this is horse led, is I was doing a sound bath funeral for my mare who passed, and a woman who I had not really met anywhere before, she decided she wanted to come, and she goes, can I please be there? And about halfway through the ceremony, she just starts going, Kate, I need to tell you something. Your horse is here, and she wants you to teach people what she taught you. And I was like, I know that. I feel that. And I said, thank you for sharing that. I said, I will do that. That was 2017 when she passed. It took me to 2022 to really get that done and get that launched. And I really asked the horses, what is it you want to teach? What is it that you are here to share about? And they said, you know, really pull together a whole curriculum on us, like on the horses as spiritual teachers and animal communication, because I saw that missing through the certification programs, in addition to spiritual psychology. So bringing in my master's program and teaching the core kind of values and tenets and principles, like we're divine beings having a human experience, you know, is the context. And then the marketing piece, because my background was corporate marketing, right? And also nonprofit and small business marketing. And I know that a lot of these coaches are amazing, but they don't get going because, you know, of both their inner work that they need to do, but also the outer work of marketing. So, yeah, put those three together.
You put all those together. So this Awakening with Equine, what's it called? Sorry.
Awakening with Equines certification program. Yeah, it's a 6-month certification program.
What sort of people do you have that sign up for that?
I've had people who've already done certifications or other trainings, but they're very drawn to learning the animal communication so they can better work with horses as partners in the coaching space. They want the spiritual piece. They want to do their own inner work. They want to be able to help facilitate deeper change with people. So not just traditional asking questions, but really helping to hold space for people in a different way. And then also they want to grow their business. They want to be successful. They want the marketing tips, but they want to do it with someone they feel like that's not going to tell them what to do, that they can have their own path. Because I think in some of the certification programs, this is the model, this is the way. Whereas what I want is everyone to have their own energy signature and their own relationship with their horses and their horse's own teaching, and then to bring that to people so that it's their own unique business.
Do you find that, because, you know, you've done a lot of work, you've done a lot of things leading up to you starting this certification. Do you find, what's my question here? Do you find that people that sign up for your certification, is there a perspective change they need to have for it to work? Because you have this perspective, the way you look at the world, from you've done a lot of different things. Is it easy for you to you know, help these people with this certification where they're at, or do you have to kind of like help them, you know, change their perspective a little bit?
Yeah, I think I'm grateful that I find folks that are either spiritual newbies and want tools and want to talk about all of this, and they're coming out of like really high pressure corporate, and then they've tried Reiki or they've tried yoga, and they're like, okay, what else is possible, right? Kate might know, and Kate's still grounded and not, you know, she's this blend of practical and spiritual. So I think that I find people when they're really ready and open, they're like seeking it, you know, they know there's something more to life. And I think I also then find people who are also like, it, you know, advanced or already on this path for a while. And so the perspective change, that's not hard. Sometimes people say, well, can you really teach animal communication? Can you really learn it? That's a question I get sometimes, you know, and then I find people will come in. I had someone come in as a trainer, but wanted to start working as with coaching. I had someone come in, decided they really wanted to go in the animal communication realm, not as much in the coaching space. So it's really designed to give you the foundation for those skill sets so you can take it to whichever sort of iteration you need to do. You don't have to come out and say, I'm a coach. You can come out and say, I'm facilitating with horses in this new way and offering experiences that are here for me. Someone came out and says, I want to partner with camels. I'm like, do it. Like, how cool is that? Right. So it's like, really, for me, I think I find the people who are already trailblazing and want to do something totally unique. And it's all soul contract, you know, clients that are coming. It's not, you know, it's not a commercial program. Right. So
you mentioned the camels. Tell me about goat therapy. You say, I read that you do goat therapy. Tell me about goat therapy.
Oh, man, the goats found me and also took over my life. So I'm a double Capricorn. Goats, like, I'm like, think I'm half goat and half horse in some ways. So ultimately, I was at a sound bath in Los Angeles with the woman who started, like, the number one goat yoga program in LA. And this goat's like hanging out with its like beard over my face while I'm in the sound bath. And I just stopped, I couldn't stop smiling and like laughing. And 2 hours later, my mouth is like hurting from smiling so hard. And I'm like, I want everyone to have this. I want the whole world to have that level of joy all the time. And so it was just so neat. And I was going to reach out to her, and she reached out to me, and she's like, hey, I know you work with horses. Would you want to work with the goats? I'm like, yeah, please. And so we did like play therapy. So we like went over horse jumps with goats. We did goat hikes, goat meditations in LA. I loved it. And then when I moved to Colorado, I set an intention. I want to be somewhere where I can have my own goats. And I found a goat yoga place and moved to that ranch, or started working at that ranch. And then she bred goats for babies, for people to have as pets, not the milking industry, not the like agriculture industry, but really for people to have goats as like pets. And then I've had my girls since birth, and they're incredible. Like, I mean, I've had a 5D experience with one of my goats. Like, they're amazing. And people who know. So.
Okay. We're going to back up here a bit, because you're talking to me like you said, oh, yeah, I went to the number one goat yoga studio in LA. Like, I've never heard of goat yoga. Tell me about goat yoga.
Oh, okay. So goat yoga is this weird trend that started several years ago. And they partner with baby goats, and they jump on people while they're doing poses on the ground. And so it's like you get that kind of, I think it like is a chiropractic adjustment at times, but you're doing goats. You're doing yoga, and they're running around, or they're on your back. And it's to make people laugh, and it's to get people into that lighter space. I love doing yoga with horses more than goats, because it's about union. And I think the horses are so good at creating union energy, or asking us to be in union energy. But ultimately, yeah, the goats are, it's really lighthearted. And they'll often say, you're not going to necessarily get a big yoga workout. It's not about the seriousness, right? It's about the playfulness. And like, I need that a lot. And that's part of why I think I'm here, is to bring some of that energy, is bring more play in. Because inner work can be heavy. It can be hard at times, right? And so it's like, my professor would always crack jokes, and he was like, you got to have fun doing this work. And I'm like, yes. And so I think that's what the goats do. And I have people go in with them before they go in with the horses, because they're heart openers too. And people get down on the ground, they connect to their inner child more, and they're in more awe. And then they go in with the horses. The horses have an easier job. So.
Well, after you explained goat yoga, I realized that I do dog yoga.
There you go.
because or dog workouts, because I'll be working out and there's a dog either on my back or
Yeah, they love the energy of it. They love the movement of it. So
yeah, goats are pretty playful. Okay, tell me about where did the animal communication part come in? Because when you're talking about your certification, you mentioned that, and it's like, where did that come from?
That is something that's probably always been there, because like when I was little, I could see ghosts and things, and I shut a lot of it down. I was clairaudient as a kid, and I shut it all down.
Aren't you the lady that said I was a complete atheist and didn't believe in anything?
Yes, but I.
But you were seeing ghosts.
Yeah, and that's why I studied the paranormal. But I was not interested in like the whole, how do I say it? Like, I guess my thing is I probably came into this lifetime with some beef with God and some beef with like religion. And then I just was like, no, for many years. But I was always an empath, and I was always highly intuitive, and I always had a lot of awareness that I couldn't explain, right? So I shut it down, and I didn't, you know, it wasn't always fully supported either, you know, like a lot of us. And what happened with the horses is I started to hear them a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. And, you know, just random things. Like one horse would go, "Where's the kids?" And I was like, "What?" Like someone was just talking in the field, and I was the only one out there with this herd. And then I'm like, "Oh, you miss doing the summer camps for the kids that are coming." And I'm like, "Wow." Like, you know, and I was shocked. And then when it really opened up was I did an Earth Day meditation. We did like Earth mandalas, and we did an Earth Day meditation. And then I walked back into the barn, and they were talking, and I'm like, I'm totally nuts now. So it was so beautiful though. Like I heard one of the horses say, like, "I wish you were my human." And of course that's a hard thing, you know, and you hear them, it's a new level of responsibility, you know, because you get to realize that they will tell you what they want, and they will tell you things you can do. And so ultimately, once we hear them, we have the responsibility then to choose to help them even more, deliver, you know, or say to them, "I can't meet that need, but I hear you." Right. And so it's, it was really beautiful. And then I studied, and I went to like 5 different animal communicators to take classes, because I was like, can I really do this? And I learned different ways. And then I ultimately came up with my own way. And, yeah, it's just been beautiful since then. So I do a lot of remote work with all different types of animals. I recently talked to rabbits, which was so fun. So
I've got to ask you a question about when you walked in the barn and they were talking to you and you said, "I'm totally nuts now." How, because I'm sure a lot of people will experience things like that on this journey. How did you deal with that? Were you like, really starting to doubt yourself, like, "I think I'm losing my mind," or did you like, "Okay, that's a thing"?
Yeah, it was more the okay. It was like, okay. I think what I've been grateful for is that over the years I've had my awakening in small doses over time, right? And bigger doses, like what happened to me at practicum in my master's program, but where that was like I was like a totally different human being. And then, you know, but I get little bits and little things. And so I've always been cautiously, you know, like skeptical and optimistic at the same time. And just been like, and a lot of what it is I try it out and I'm like, does this feel good? Right? Like the way the horses would be like, does this feel good? Does this not feel good? You know, it's like, does this feel resonant? Does it not? You know, and I hear a lot of very woo-woo things sometimes from other people, and I'm still like checking it out with myself. I don't even like the word woo-woo, right? I just feel like it's, you know, we don't understand so much of the brain. We haven't done as much research on the gut and the heart as we could. There's a lot we don't even know about what could just be basic science, but we just don't know it yet, you know? So
you had some grace when you said, "I'm totally nuts now." You were, it was joking. Yeah, because I do think a lot of people on their, you know, on their journey to awakening kind of will have that moment where they're like, I think I'm losing my damn mind. And, you know, talking to people about, you know, my journey, and as I start to open up, I had, one of the things that have concerned me, like, what if I go crazy?
Yeah.
Like, what if I lose my mind? I remember I was at dinner last year with a lady who's really on the path, and it was just her and I at dinner, and we were talking across the table, and I looked at her and I said, what if I lose my mind? And she looked at me and blinked and said, shrugged her shoulders and said, what if? And I was like, damn, that's not the answer I wanted.
It's a great response, right? It's like, yeah.
What if?
Well, you know, what you're bringing forward is I love past lives. I find them fascinating. I believe them. I'm okay if people don't. But I know I had a past life in a mental institute, and it came up at practicum, and it really was terrifying to, and it was probably because I was more spiritually awake in that lifetime or whatever it might have been. I maybe had gifts. I was clairaudient because, you know, when you hear voices, I mean, I started hearing voices in fourth grade, and my parents thought something was wrong. They were like, and I would imagine, you know, back then you're like, is my kid schizophrenic? Is there something, you know what I mean? And so there is this interesting, I saw an article recently that it said like there's more understanding now that maybe some mental health issues or mental are actually just really advanced spiritual skills, right? So there is a really interesting intersection, I think, that we're all still exploring around what is considered crazy, what's considered spiritual awakening. And I think ultimately my master's program would say, don't judge it, be with it, right? Mm. And like, when we judge it, then we can put fear on it, or we can put, you know, we put it in a box rather than allowing ourselves to be like, okay, like that what if question is a beautiful question. Let me explore it. Let me run the experiment, you know. But I know I had to do healing, really deep healing on being like my fear of going crazy. I did have to do that work, and it's intense, you know, and the good news is we have grounded people around us, right? And they'll help us. That's how I do it. I have my backup systems in place for everything. So
that was something you considered.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's something I felt remnant energy on in my body and in my mind. And I know that if you look at some of the leaders in the spiritual space, like John Roger, who helped inspire, he had MSIA, Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, which was also, you know, he was one of the teachers for my teachers, Ron and Mary Holnick at the University of Santa Monica. And basically, you know, he has a story about it too, like how people will sometimes talk about, you know, like, are you in the mental institute? There's a really great movie called Spiritual Warrior that he talks about the whole, like, is it a psychotic break or is it an awakening? And it's, you know, it really brought me to tears because I do feel like I had to do a lot of healing work on that. Like, am I crazy? And for a while, Warwick, I was like scared of people calling me crazy. Like, I was like, don't call me crazy. Don't call me weird. And now I'm like, that's a really cool compliments, you know. I'm not scared like, of
thank
it.
You.
I'm not scared of it, but I was so scared to come out of the spiritual closet. I was terrified, and then as soon as I did a few years ago, that's when my business actually started to grow and really flourish because I was willing to own it, and I wasn't willing to own it for a long time.
So you are now congruent, then?
I feel way more congruent for sure. Yeah, that's my intention.
Tell me about MSIA. You just mentioned that, and I've never heard that term before.
Yeah, so Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness is John Roger, and I've kind of got connected in through the film. So, like, John Roger came to Lionsgate, and we screened Spiritual Warrior at one point, and there's also there's another film I'm forgetting right now, but they're really fascinating documentaries, and showcase, you know, but see, I was also going to the conscious media festivals. So there's also another, I'll see if I can find the documentary for you, but there's another guy who the one that I get nervous about with the whole crazy is clairvoyance. I don't really want to see things. I don't know if I want to have that yet. So I've kind of kept that closed, that intuitive gift. But there's a great movie about a guy that really thought he was going nuts. And it's, I'll see if I can get the name for you. But yeah, he talks about what it was like when he started to have visions and see things in his house. There's a very interesting intersection here, you know. But if we can keep the fear out of it, that's been my learning, is like, can we just keep the fear out of it? And then we can stay present with it, you know?
That's the key, isn't it? Keeping the fear out of it.
Yeah. But it's hard if we
anything.
Have, yeah, exactly. 100%. Especially out of working with horses. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about, I wrote something down here. Recently, you talked with rabbits. What have rabbits got to tell us?
Oh, my goodness. So the thing we haven't yet touched on that is where I've gotten to it as of today, and I'm constantly learning, constantly, like as you are, like students and teachers at the same time, right? Like that's one of the things I admire about you, is that you're always a student and you're always a teacher. And by the way, Wayne Dyer always said that that's why he was successful, because he was both a student and a teacher at the same time. And anything he learned, he wanted to share. And that's actually what helped him be happy and congruent and successful, actually. So but what the rabbits do, which is new information for me, although I'm sure it was right there, but they're doing energy healing the way cats, dogs, horses are doing healing work, like in different ways, in different capacities. But I was talking to this rabbit on Zoom and I felt like my heart just started like totally, I mean, I was like in tears. I felt it open. I felt so much love come in. And each of the rabbits were different, just like each of us. We, I think, all have different gifts. You know, it took me a long time to even use the word healer for myself. Like I had such a weird, hard time with that word. I had a really hard time. The New York Post called me a psychic and I literally freaked out. Talk about like, oh no, I don't want anyone to know. Like I was so back in the spiritual closet then. But the rabbits are just like, they're small. They're prey. You have to be in that motherly nurturing energy when you hold them. So if you don't, like I've never had a human child in this lifetime, right? So it's like, the rabbit energy is that pure, it's something that you think would be wild, but you're holding it. So you're holding wildness and you're holding this precious small thing that you as a big predator could actually hurt. And then it teaches you self-trust and it teaches you that precious energy, right? That nourishing, like how do we nourish and support all of life? So, and then the energy healings, which is my favorite thing about the animals.
I just had a first in my 57 years. I've never been talking to somebody who said, I was talking to a rabbit on Zoom.
Yeah, there you go. Well, now you have Go Yoga and rabbits on Zoom with me, so you can remember those.
This spiritual warrior movie, are a lot of those types of things on Gaia, you know?
Yeah, Gaia has a decent amount. Now I feel like, you know, Netflix and Amazon was putting Heal front and center, which is wonderful, yeah. Right? And a yeah. lot of these sites, you can find them on their own website too, which filmmakers got really smart and they realized they didn't always have to do the traditional distribution route. So they have them on their own site. But yeah, they're getting out there more into the world, which is nice to see, because that was always one of my intentions, is that we spread awareness through film, because it's a way for people to digest it. And like, I remember I watched an alien documentary and I just sat there for 2 days, like thinking about it, because it's a way to like watch it and not have to talk about it right away, not have to process it. You can just be with it and be like, okay, what if this feels resonant with me and what doesn't, you know? And I think for me, that's what's most important in spiritual work is discernment, right? Like and I think that's why I was an atheist, so that I had that skill already of being, using my skeptical brain applied to things, you know? Yeah. But truth, you know, truth feels good in the body is my experience, you know, or if it doesn't feel good, then there's some work to do with it, you know, and there's a level of, at the end of the day, do we really know anything, you know, like, will we get to the other side and find out like a lot that we don't, you know, that we bought into that may or may not have been true. So sometimes it does just come down to, does it make you happier to believe that? Or is it, are you suffering if you believe that, right?
Yeah, like with anything, like I love Brené Brown says that her husband Steve said, I don't know if it's true or not, but I like to believe that everybody's doing the best that they can because it makes my life better. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like that. If you're, you know, if you've been out of shape about a lot of things or whatever, it just affects you. It doesn't affect them.
Yes.
So I think it's time we might get to some of the questions that you chose. And, you know, the questions you chose, you don't choose them in a certain order. You just choose them, but they came out in this order. So we're going to start out with one that most people don't choose. What's an unusual habit you have that you'd like to share with us?
So one of my favorite things I discovered out here in Colorado is this thing called the harmonic egg. And it's a sound and light chamber that you go into. It's shaped as an egg. So it's like this very primordial experience. It feels very much like being like you're in a spaceship. It's wild. And I've had some of the deepest kind of healings and clearings and visions, inspirations in it. The woman who created it is just this like genius who creates awesome technology and has a horse as well. And she, you know, I just don't know where the technology came from. And that, so I always think about that, but I do it monthly and it really kind of, it just keeps me very balanced. So that's probably my unusual habit. And I'm glad I found it. And it's something that I feel like we all have to find that one thing that is kind of like, for instance, Robin and the ice bath, right? Like, it's like, mm-hmm. Yep. There's that one thing I think that is so powerful for our nervous system or for our own mental and emotional or spiritual health. So that's kind of my go-to. And if I ever get like scared now, I just put myself in the egg and I have that experience. So
what is this thing called? A harmonic what?
The harmonic egg. And it's basically sound and light is what it mostly is. So there's meditation journeys you're going on for about an hour and they pick colors. It's based on intention. But what I feel when I go in is that my guides, the horses on the other side that I work with as well, that I've had, and just like any healing team is, it feels like they're in there with me helping and supporting. So I've brought many issues into the egg and had physical healings. It's just a really beautiful device, I guess is what you'd call it. So the other one that I don't share about very much that's horse related is I like to do Kundalini activations on the back of my horse. And I like to play with really more, you know, you've heard of therapeutic riding and what that can do, but this is a different type of therapeutic. So I like to actually, because I've done Kundalini yoga, it's big in Los Angeles. And so I love playing with that energy, you know, because I feel like it's benefiting both of us when I'm really focused on moving energy through the chakras. So.
Well, so I've got another thing to look up, the harmonic
yes,
egg.
Yes, you have a new research list from this. Yes.
I've got a page of notes I've scribbled here.
Nice.
Spiritual warrior, truth feels good in the body. I've got all sorts of goat therapy.
Nice.
So one of the other questions you asked was, what have you changed in the past 5 years that has changed the course of your life?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit what we talked about before, where I just got over my fear of coming out of the spiritual closet and owning, being okay if someone called me a psychic or a channel. Even the newest one is like the word medium. And I think I've just been okay. I've really allowed myself to own my spiritual gifts, the fact that spirituality has really changed me and helped me the most, my intuition as well. And so I think it's just being open to owning it instead of hiding it and thinking that people wouldn't accept me or like me if I was too spiritual. Because I remember I'm in corporate for so long and it's not accepted or talked about there. So, yeah.
So the next question you chose was, what advice would you have for people wanting to get into your occupation? But, you know, like most of my guests, you don't have a quote unquote occupation. You've got a list of things you do. Maybe you have different advice for people getting into different aspects of what you do, but what advice would you have for people who basically try and want to do what you're doing?
I would say learn from as many people as you possibly can. Be like a sponge. Approach the learning as though everyone has a golden nugget for you, an aha moment. And then you can certainly choose into the teacher or teachers you most resonate with, for sure. But for instance, like your podcast, I mean, I've studied with several of the people that you've interviewed, and I feel like I've learned so much from all of them, you know. And I find that anytime there's like a clinic or something that I feel resonance with, like, I'm just going to go. Like, Lockie Phillips came out here. You were out here in Colorado. I just went. I was like, I just want to go. And so I think when you're entering the field, learn from many different places and don't buy into the belief system that you have to do it any one way. We're each here to shine our own unique light and do it our own energy signature and soul's code way.
Great answer. And the question that everybody asks, what is your relationship like with fear?
So I have always struggled with fear in such a big way. And yet I was like, I think I was a really scared kid. And I definitely find that it's about facing fears for me. And so like my journey has been, I have this really random fear of, you know, children with Down syndrome or, you know, that kind of mental health issues and physical disabilities. And so what did I do? I went and volunteered and started, you know, being of service to them. So that way I could really like immerse myself in it. I was terrified of hospitals. So I took a job in a hospital, you know, like I am 100% like face the fear. I love one of the books that really helped me was My Year with Eleanor. And she just decided to do something that she was afraid of. I think it was every day for a year. And it was based on that Eleanor Roosevelt quote, do the thing you're most afraid of.
Right.
So face your fears.
Wowzers. And what is the luckiest thing that's ever happened to you?
I think it's been being gifted my current horse, Phoenix. She came at a time, you know, early 2020 when I needed like really to have a friend and to have something new to really look forward to. And she was manifested. I went through four or five other horses I was supposed to get. And then one of the horses said a big paint mare is coming. And so I actually got guidance to ask a friend if she could see if she could help me manifest a horse like her gelding. And then next, because I wanted a gelding, an easy gelding. And then you basically 2 days later, she was at a feed store and talking to this woman, and she had a paint mare. And her personality and energy is big. So I did not get the easy gelding I wanted. I got, you know, a mare that challenges me at every step of the way and has made me a better person because of it. So she's been such a huge gift, and I've been very lucky to have manifested her in many ways. So constantly teaching me everything.
She sounds wonderful.
You would enjoy her. You could probably help her even more than I could. So hopefully you'll get to meet her.
So hopefully I do. I'm going to start into some questions that you didn't even choose, just because you mentioned a book a second ago. And one of the questions is, what book do you recommend the most? Not necessarily your favorite book to read, but one you feel everyone else needs to read. Do you have one of those?
I have a bunch of them. So the one that changed my life, that kind of took me out of atheism, to be honest, is Louise Hay's You Can Heal Your Life. It was the first time I read about personal responsibility. I like took the chapter to my dad and was like, okay, we've had this relationship partly because of me, partly because of you, but partly because of me. And it was just this beautiful healing thing that I just like did and owned. And then, I don't know, I love the whole mind-body connection. I just, that really helped open me up out of the atheism. My first coach gave me the book, Slowing Down to the Speed of Life, which I needed to get out of hustle culture. At the time, she was a lawyer leaving her job at NBC Universal, and she was just helping me like to realize that slowing down would be one of the more powerful energies that I could be. So that's another one. And yeah, I recommend that one to clients a lot. I feel like there's others, but those are the two right now that are coming to mind.
That's good, because I've not heard of either of those, so that's another book to add to the pile.
There you go.
If you could spread a message across the world, one that people would listen to, what would that message say? Or your favorite quote?
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, they're tied. I love Marianne Williamson's quote that, you know, it's not actually our darkness that we're most afraid of, it's our light. And we have that belief, right, of who am I to be bold and beautiful and powerful, and who are you not to be? You're playing small is a disservice to the world, right? It's really about owning your light. So, yeah, the more I get to know about everything is we are just light. And we get to get out of our own way and shine it more.
Wow. What accomplishment are you most proud of?
I pause.
And that was a question that you did choose, by the way. That's not me just throwing random stuff at you.
It's an evolution. I will say, I think my inner work, you know, getting my master's program and getting out of my ego, not being as ego driven, and really seeing, you know, becoming spiritual, seeing the horses as spiritual teachers, partnering with them, like allowing myself to have what I love more than anything in the world as my offering, my career, my service, and being able to like constantly see who they are and still being in wonder, who is the horse? What is the horse? Where do they come from? Who are they? Why are they here? What are they? How are they really serving humanity right now? So I think it's my natural willingness to do the inner work, the spiritual work, and stay in awe and wonder.
You've got all kinds of good questions you've chosen here.
You had awesome questions. It was hard to pick.
I stole it from Tim Ferriss's Tribe of Mentors book.
Tim's awesome.
For the most part.
Yeah. Nice. That's cool.
Where do you go? What do you do to relieve stress or recharge your batteries?
100% grounding on the earth. I sit on the ground almost every day, even when there's snow. I like to sit and ground and connect and breathe with the horses, really just focus on breathing and, you know, closing my eyes and receiving the energy that they want to bring me. That's really how I recharge. I feel, I can have a headache and it will be gone in 5 to 10 minutes being with horses. It's just
really
amazing what they're doing.
Wow. What do you feel your true purpose is in the world?
I think it's to assist with awakening.
I would say I'm picking up those vibes, yes.
to be one of the light workers that assists with awakening. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely say you're on the right track there.
Yeah, thank you.
And the last question you chose, what is one common myth about your profession or field that you want to debunk? And you might have to quantify which of your professions or fields you want to talk about.
It covers both really in many ways, but it's that it bugs me when people are like, well, animals don't talk. And I'm like, what? They're sentient life. Sentient life communicates. Whether you can hear them, that's a different story. But sentient life communicates. And yeah, I don't love the whole, like, well, horses aren't actually talking, or horses aren't communicating, or, you know, like, vets will say it a lot, right? Well, the animals aren't going to tell you what's wrong. And I'm like, actually, they can tell you, you know. Sometimes they don't know what's wrong the way we don't, right? We don't always know what's going on inside our bodies. But, yeah, I want to debunk that.
Do you find, let's say you're working, how do I word this? So, you know how you said your kind of awakenings have been slow over a long period of time, whereas for me, you know, I was about 50 before I, you know, I think I looked at the world the same kind of for 50 years and then had quite a shift kind of one after another after another. And for me, it's very easy for me to remember when I looked at the world completely differently. So it's relatively easy for me to have a little grace for somebody who views the world the way I used to, because it was like yesterday. Do you find that, you know, like vets will say, oh, they can't tell you, whatever. Does that kind of grate on you a little bit? I mean, I don't think it would, but with all the work that you've done, but I'm just wondering, how do you handle situations like that?
Well, I worked in vet med for 2 years recently, like not that long ago. And so it was a weird, like I was the Trojan horse. Like I was very, and you know, I was called weird and I was, you know, like, oh gosh, Kate, like, and I'm like, you don't need to agree with me. Right. Like, I think that's the whole thing. Would you rather be right or happy? I would definitely rather be happy. And I may be wrong. Like, we all can be at times. But I have a lot of compassion for the atheist lifestyle. I don't necessarily want to hang out with it per se, you know, like, and be around it all the time. But it's also something that I have compassion for. That I have compassion for the veterinarians is a very traditional space, right? They're not even really teaching nutrition in vet school, you know, so there's a whole level of opportunity for that field to evolve and grow. So I was grateful I was there and sprinkled and planted seeds, and then, you know, they'll grow in time. I think that's sometimes what I think about is like, I may just be here to plant the seeds. You're planting so many seeds with this podcast. It's so important, you know, to be able to like get people to just consider it, right? Just consider, like, it, we don't have to get into right or wrong, good or bad. We just don't, you know?
Great answer. You know what? I've had the funnest time chatting with you. I could chat with you for ever and ever. But we're out of questions. So now you get to tell us, how do people find out more about you and where can they contact you?
Yeah. So my website's katenelligan.com and the Facebook group is Awakening with Equines, Kate Nelligan Equine Coach are my social handles. And I'd love to talk to people about the certification program, the card deck we didn't get to talk about, but it's also Awakening with Equines.
Let's talk about the card deck, because you sent me a card deck. Yeah, tell me about the card deck.
Yeah, so this came in because the horses one day said, write down like what we teach, and like 40 qualities just poured down in a list. And I went, ah, you really want people to work with these emotional intelligence skills, which is, you know, really what a lot of, I think, the equine assisted services fields are about, is helping people really, well, ideally is about embodying these qualities. So they came in with like joy and surrender and wisdom and relationship. And then this evolved over time because I knew, you know, first I had a different artist. Then luckily I found Nika Ware, who's the incredible artist with this, because she gets the human horse connection so well. She really does. And the Horse Collective, which is a whole nother Horse Collective, Horse Ancestors, whole nother conversation. But ultimately, I wanted to do something to really honor the horses. And I've always loved card decks. I've always felt like, you know, like I've used Linda's and I feel like they're just powerful as a tool. So then what was really neat is I was writing it outside at the ranch and the horses said, we want you to do the book in a way where the first part is what the horses said. So I channeled what they said about intimacy. And then they asked me to write about my coaching from like the years of working with people on qualities around intimacy or even my own work. And then they wanted me to put an exercise in on the bottom that essentially anyone in the equine assisted services world or anyone who has horses, you know, works with horses could do with a horse. And they're all kind of groundwork, basic mindfulness things that can help people connect with them more. So I was like, this is really cool. It was very much guided by them because I just kind of kept asking, well, how can I serve you? And what do you need? And what is this deck? And then my horses wanted to be on this cover, this side of the cover. And one of my horses looks like one that's in spirit. And then of course the Pegasus energy. And so it's really, you know, it's just been neat. And I took all of them from photos. So like, this is a photo of someone working with a horse in Malibu, Confidence, with the, so they were all based, most of them, some were just Nika's beautiful, like, you know, iteration. Like that one was just Nika channeling what is creativity for her. And then some were my photos. Like we had a labyrinth in Malibu and I said goodbye to my lease horse, Felici, in the labyrinth before she died. And, you know, so it's, and this one's Awareness. So they each have their own, and you'll feel the horses when you work with them. Like you'll feel the different, like that's my mare in spirit. And so they're all, it really was to be a legacy for these incredible horses that have been like master teachers for me. I just wanted to give back to them and they're so proud of it. Like I was in the shower one day and I just heard them say, Kate, we're all over the world now. And we're all these other practitioners are working with us. And I'm like, I'm so happy for you guys. Like, that's why I did it. You know, like and it was like really hard and a big investment. And I was just like, I'm still doing it. So it's been really cool. It's been really fun. And I've met so many cool people from doing it. Like I'm sure you have with not only social media, but your book and the podcast, you get to, you know, there's a lot of cool people you get to meet. Right. So it's been fun.
Yeah, I get to meet cool people and they introduce me to other cool people. And I'm not even sure how I found you. How did I find you?
I don't honestly. Oh, did you send me? No, but we have a lot of people in common. So
yeah, we do. Yeah. We do. Yeah, you've worked with Linda. You've worked with Carolyn. You know
Rupert. Christine I did Dixon. A class with Elsa. I hosted in Los Angeles. Yeah, quite a bit. And there's still some on your list that I want to you know, to get to know and work with. Christine is, you know, I've known Christine for years. She was at one of my workshops in Los Angeles. So yeah, there's been a whole hub of connectivity there. So
yeah, that's awesome. I noticed on your website, you have kind of some blogs or something or other. And one of them was a blog about the horse boy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was early days in Malibu that Rupert came and it's interesting because the Cunnilini work I do now with my horse is kind of inspired by the horse boy method, because what I started to find is that anyone can benefit from a horse boy where you're doing those poses of essentially resetting. And I've seen so much magic happen, you know, and I'm not necessarily like it's selling it as horse boy sessions, you know, per se, because that's his work obviously, but there's this release that happens when you do different, I think of it too as yoga poses. In some ways, you know, on the back of a horse. But it was really, you know, what I found early days as I watched what horses did for those in recovery and rehab, those who had, my mentor was also working with at-risk youth, dual diagnosis, autistic. Those are not spaces I play in, you know, and I work in because I really think that's great for psychotherapy. But I personally like started to realize so much of my shift was happening when I would do horse boy myself. So I do a lot of it. I try to do it every time I'm on a horse now is do some horse boy and introduce it to clients. And there's still a huge interest. Like he still has so much movement and growth, I think, available because people need to know about different ways of like riding and being with horses. Like, that's all evolving, I think, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff evolving to do with the horses right now.
Thank God.
So you currently live in Boulder, Colorado.
Yes.
I think you mentioned before we got on that you're thinking of moving back into California.
Yes, and one of the places I'm looking at is in Paso. So
really?
Yes, actually.
I was going
to
say.
It's interesting when timing.
When you get back into California, I'd love to catch up with you.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I'm looking. I love the Monterey to Santa Cruz area up in Northern. I have friends in Northern. But the only thing that's come forward at the moment is in Paso. So we'll see what happens. I'll definitely let you know. But I could be a couple miles up the street probably. So
We might be neighbors. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
That would be fun. It would really be fun. You have such a beautiful property, it seems like. It looks fantastic. The stuff that you guys are going to do there looks so cool. So,
yeah, we're excited. So, Kate, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I had a fascinating conversation.
Yay. I'm so glad. Thank you so much for having me. This is something I wanted to do, and I'm really grateful that we got to talk.
I'm glad we did it. So you guys at home, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Journey On Podcast.
Thanks for being a part of the Journey On Podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick has over 850 full-length training videos on his online video library at videos.warwickschiller.com. Be sure to follow Warwick on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram to see his latest training advice and insights.